So if we return to the concept of nimitta, when understanding thinks about nimitta, please complete the sentence.
Understanding, you talk about understanding, right?
Yes.
Okay, at moment of experiencing nimitta, understanding can understand that which knows the nimitta.
Understanding can understand
that which knows the nimitta.
Yes.
That which knows
the nimitta. As that which experiences.
Yeah. Which is experiences. Yeah. Okay. Uh-huh. Experiences.
Because there are only two categories. One reality, one type, or one category cannot experience anything at all. So whenever there is experiencing, they are all different types from that which cannot experience. Mm-hmm. And if you don't call it nama, it's the experiences now. Instead of thinking of nama and name, it's that which is now experiencing. Now.
So Lobha thinks, Dosa thinks, Mana thinks.
Panya thinks. We call this, but actually that which think or touch the object is vitakka, vijara, cetasika. Each one performs its function. Because touching with Lobha, touching the object with Dosa, they're there.
So vitakka touches with Lobha or touches with Dosa.
Or Panya or any other cetasika.
That's why the touching always feels more or less the same, because the vitakka is always there, the hardness is always there. Mm-hmm. But is it with Panya or Dosa or attachment or avijja?
Right.
But it always feels approximately the same, right? Mm-hmm. Those different flavors are there. And if they're not known, one could think one's having awareness, but actually it's just avijja.
Are you talking about touching hardness or?
Well, people get very excited to know hardness. They think having some experience of hardness or having some experience of vedana. But is it with dosa or avijja or lopa or really panya? This
but
is the key thing.
A moment ago when Konstantin was talking about touching, he was just talking about vitakka, touching at each moment.
So I was just using example of hardness. Only Panya can know whether there's really Panya there or just another reality, even though it all feels exactly the same.
And that's why when earlier you were saying, yes, but people still talking about people or things or whatever, but understanding Paramattha Dhammas doesn't mean not talking or thinking about books and tables and peoples and characters.
This might not even be a Dhamma thing, but we can create this image, like if I'm Phil who's behaved in a certain way at DSG and that idea is reinforced, I sense that people have been holding on to this idea of who I am, and that doesn't really help me. But that's not really
just
a Dhamma, it's just a story.
Are you trying to explain yourself?
I love myself, I'm fascinated by my story, as I said.
So Ajahn, this is the reason why you have said that it's like now. When Panya arises, it's like now, because...
On the question of nimitta, we know that nimitta is used in different contexts. For example, nimitta in the development of samatha, and sankhara nimitta, which you're talking about here. And the expression in the text, guard the sign, guard the nimitta, is this just in the context of the development of samatha?
Nimitta is nimitta all the way.
Whichever the context. Mm-hmm. So what does it mean by guard the sign, guard the nimitta?
To understand.
Just to understand.
Yeah.
So guard the nimitta means understand the nimitta. Mm-hmm.
Each word of the Buddha's teaching is panya.
About understanding.
You once said every word in the teaching is satipatthana. And I remember once talking about that with John, that I couldn't accept the idea that every word of the Buddha's teaching was about satipatthana. Maybe I'm going to be more open to that now. We'll see.
When there is Panya which knows what satipatthana is, everything can be object of satipatthana.
I think it's governed in the concept of the Four Noble Truths. the Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths, which means that he taught the reality of dukkha, of lopa, of the path. So that's it.
I think John conceded at that point that we could say that every word is leading towards satipatthana.
Well, I think that's correct, but I think specifically you feel that in the Anguttara Nikaya there are a lot of suttas that are directed towards lay people and only speak at the level of sila and do not include
or just Samyutta about the king, I forget. And according to Bhikkhu Bodhi's notes, he was a king who didn't have accumulations for insight, so the Buddha taught to him in a way that he could understand at his level. For example, telling him not to eat too much, to eat a measure full of rice only, or to take care of his property in a certain way. And when I read those suttas, I felt that they were aimed at people who in this lifetime perhaps didn't have conditions for insight but could still benefit at their level, as I was saying yesterday, but I'm going to be opening to read. And Bhikkhu Bodhi explains it in that way in the introduction to that section of Samyutta Nikaya. Do you remember the name of the king I'm referring to? It's Samyutta Nikaya 7, I think. He's the same king whose wife asked him, he asked his wife, who do you love?
Prasenndikosi.
So I'm already beginning to reconsider, but the idea that some of the Buddha's teachings are aimed at people he recognizes don't have conditions for insight, but he helped them at a different level.
The question is, as I understand it, whether when we read the suttas about observing good sila and that sort of thing, whether these are to be taken just as about sila or about satipatthana as well.
Can that word be object of satipatthana?
Can
that
word
be object of satipatthana? So it depends on the understanding. Sitting here around, what about if a person who has developed understanding enough to become enlightened? Is it possible?
But one thing for sure, none of those people would take sila for self or any of those.
So no matter what word, it can be object of understanding.
Why is it for certain that none of those people? Why is it certain?
Well, the Buddha would know.
So he wouldn't have taught them if he thought
they would take it for self.
And it's not limited only to some group of people. It depends on understanding for anyone.
But we read that the Buddha, this is addressing more Sukhin's point, we read that the Buddha knew if the mind was ready to absorb the teachings and if it wasn't ready. And so surely correct understanding of anatta would not be a precondition for the Buddha to decide that.
No, what I'm saying is that they wouldn't take it for self, they wouldn't misunderstand it, right? If they did misunderstand it, then they're not actually hearing the Dhamma. Of course, some wouldn't be ready to hear, especially if they've never been exposed to teachings before. They need to hear something that's familiar, what I was trying to explain to you. So if they know a bit about sila already, that was the starting point. And that's okay. But it's not like they would start following various practices of believing that sila must come first or not. They don't have such ideas.
Do we have to think of sila right now to come first before listening?
And sila and everything is about reality, right?
Here we go again. I really don't think I have a question based on that now. I just want to keep listening. I think I'm in a listening on that point now, and I'll just...
Because you know already about sila, but what is not known yet should be developed.
Understanding.
Mm, understanding.
I think it's too easy to forget that sila includes the development of right understanding, and that's the highest level of sila, is that correct? So we often think of it in terms of behavior, conventional behavior, and it definitely includes that, but it is far more than that.
Yeah, sure. And again,
many times Ajahn said to me yesterday, not enough. But if there's a level of kusala for me that involves thinking about conventional behavior, that's not going to change because of this 3-day trip. I mean, I'm going to continue thinking in those terms because it's my accumulations, but I hope I'll be able to continue to understand that that's not enough and to develop understanding.
The important thing is not sila, but it's the panya, understanding.
No one's trying to say that you should stop thinking. What's being addressed is thinking with self. It's the self-view or the wrong idea of practice.
Phil, just following on that idea of accumulations, like in a sense I can hear you thinking about your accumulations continuing and not changing in the foreseeable future. Ajahn, I wonder if there's a question around what can we say about accumulations other than as they manifest now? Can we say anything about accumulations in the future or only now?
You mean that it does continue or it doesn't continue?
Well, what is it like if it continues? Because we talk about accumulations as they show now. There are indications now. But can we say anything about the future?
The future hasn't come yet.
Exactly.
So how can we know?
So is it...
But this moment is the future of previous moment.
Okay, so it sounds like we can make a prediction about accumulations continuing or not?
When we understand the succession of the accumulation, so we can understand at any time, it has to be like that. Mm. For example, this moment is the future of the previous moment. So it succeeds from previous moment or the accumulation.
And any idea about accumulations in the future is just thinking at this moment, thinking with ignorance or attachment, but not knowing anything.
And I think before that, we need to understand that accumulations is one thing, and the thinking about the accumulations is another. Usually we just think, we come to a conclusion about our accumulations.
And without accumulation, it cannot think this way.
Are we unbiased accumulations? Is that the same?
There are two words in Pali, asaya, anusaya, the accumulation of both wholesome and unwholesomeness. And anusaya is just for anusala. But asaya is both.
I see. Okay. Many times, and you might remember Sarah on the list, I would talk about abstaining from wrong deeds and you would refer to the anusayas. You'd refer to anusaya whenever I talked about abstaining from wrong deeds, and I wondered if the anusayas are so deeply rooted and are not eradicated, presumably, until we're enlightened, do we want to keep adding to them? And why would wanting to abstain from a wrong deed, the fact that it wouldn't eradicate the anusayas, but at least it wouldn't add to them, well, it would add to them loba, I guess, but
That's what it is.
So the attachment to being a pure person at this moment, that is adding to the anusaya.
Yeah. We can't help it.
It's going to happen.
But
it accumulates
all the time.
If we can at least not do the very bad deeds, at least that's not adding to anusaya, but it depends whether there's any lopa there.
And there is. Conditions at the time as to whether those bad deeds are occurring.
What will prevent the bad deeds? Is it the wanting not to have them, or is it the understanding of the harm?
It's the latter, the understanding of the harm. The wanting not to have them is just that, lobha, attachment to me not doing, me not having. Whereas the understanding is more likely to prevent.
And why you struggle to find justification, that's also adding more.
So, is it correct to understand that there's no reservoir of citta, nothing like this? So when we discuss accumulations, we're discussing the potential of the arising of various chetasikas and
Can we say that the quality or the amount of akusala akusala pass on from this moment to other moments? Otherwise, how can it go away once it has arisen and passed away? What is left? Not just nothing.
And I think I know the answer to this question already is who knows, but are the anusayas worn away gradually, or are they eradicated completely at the moment of enlightenment? Could you say some more about that, please?
That's why Buddha said that there are people with different accumulation, indriya. Some is very easy to understand, and some is not easy to understand reality of the teachings at all. What conditions then? Less or more accumulation of wholesomeness and unwholesomeness.
And are they removed completely at the path moments, moments of enlightenment?
When there is no hearing of the teachings at all, and after the hearing, is there no difference at all? No bit of understanding at all? When there's understanding at that moment, no accumulation of misunderstanding.
What does the ads handle now? Is that referring to
this moment?
This moment.
Of understanding.
We can't determine what degree of understanding there is.
Can you measure the understanding of this moment and the what is less about ignorance when there is understanding?
That image to me sounds like wearing away, and there's a feeling of something gradual
by
one moment.
More understanding. Without understanding, nothing can wear it away.
So can we say that a lack of understanding is a sign of akusala, much akusala?
Lack of understanding means that there is no understanding.
But in terms of understanding why that is the case, does it tell us that it is because there is much accumulation?
Do you still have ignorance as before, after listening to Dhamma?
I must say no. But in terms of what you just said, how did we measure?
No, no way to measure. It depends on understanding right now.
Yes.
If you can understand right now, it can be the measurement of the amount of ignorance which you have had before.
Yes. So in a sense, that can encourage us to value understanding more, because we see how much akusala there is.
This is the only way to eliminate attachment. It is compared to spaces in between every kalapa.
Sorry. I know about the space between the kalapas.
So attachment is there.
Yeah.
It's like that. It's like that.
Okay.
All day long.
Yeah.
Like the atmosphere, like the dome.
So all questions come to attachment.
Yes.
So patience, good cheer, what is it you always say?
Patience, courage, good cheer.
Yeah. Take a long time.
Does understanding ever ask questions?
It understands the question.
I want to go back to something that was said last Saturday during the discussions, at least I think it was then, about body sense. And you asked, where is it?
The body sense?
Yes, I think you asked.
All over the body.
All over the
that
body.
The potapa, the tangible object, can impinge on it.
Yes. So I'd always thought of it as being all over the body, and I guess where I went wrong was forgetting
where the kaya vinyana can arise only.
wherever the guy in Vijnana can arrive.
I wrote about that once on DSG. I had a discussion with a famous philosopher of consciousness, philosopher of mind, American, William Seeger, and he'd written a book saying that it seems like the mind arises, say, when you stub your toe, it arises at the foot, but that's impossible because science has proved it always arises in the brain. And I said, not according to Buddhism, you know, it's quite obvious. And according to Buddhism, consciousness does arise near the foot or the hand or wherever. But he said, it just appears that way, but it's impossible because we know consciousness arises at the brain. So it's quite fascinating that people have these very strong
ideas. It's a different idea about what consciousness is, I think.
I don't know. Complete misunderstanding of even experiential reality.
Is he a neurologist? Is he coming from a scientific background?
Yeah, he's a famous scientist.
Yeah.
He's a philosopher of science in the field of mind. And it's fully accepted. I mean, he wrote that, and no one would even say differently in the scientific world, you know, even though it's completely wrong. So I just brought that up as a matter of interest.
Or just different purposes of explaining.
Not only the scientists can understand that, everyone who does understand the nimitta takes all nimitta for different subjects. The brain and the theory.
I was just fascinated, even on a very conventional level. His experience disagreed with his theory of the brain and so on, so the experience must be deluding him in some way, something that's just amazing to me.
That's why you can see that for scientists, no panya at all, even that Einstein or any scientist, no panya, it's just worldly knowledge or wisdom.
Robert, can we just follow that up in terms of connecting it back to the nimitta, nimitta of hardness, say? It seems that we can think about our feet and to feel hardness, that our feet can feel hardness. So there's a lot
of... At moment of experience of hardness, do you still have the feet?
No, there's not. But I suppose what I'm trying to arrive at is, does the thinking about hardness...
Is there?
...condition the experience of hardness at that moment?
Okay, think. Do you experience hardness?
Well, if I think about feet and hardness, mm-hmm. It seems as if something happens.
Not hardness, it's
that's just thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the thinking seems to be about something happening at the level of body sense.
At that moment, the tangible object does not appear at all, so it's only pure thinking.
I'm thinking about nimitta.
Why nimitta appears?
Because hardness has appeared.
Okay, hardness appear, and then?
Nimitta of hardness.
Nimitta of hardness appear. Yeah. So?
So, when I say to you, I'm experiencing, or I did experience hardness, it's the concept of hardness.
It has its characteristic as hardness. You don't have to say anything when it appears. But when you think about it, it's not hardness.
No. Is the thinking the nimitta?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't
because
matter.
We don't have to think that now we experience nimitta. Because it's there already.
Mm-hmm. So at that moment, it's the understanding that it is nimitta that is...
When there is the understanding of hardness, no need to say that it's the understanding of the nimitta of hardness, because there must be hardness. Otherwise, there will never be the nimitta of hardness.
So again, it's that sign that you talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm. Just the characteristic of hardness at that moment.
Yes.
And when you think about feet and hardness, at that point, you're taking the nimitta for something that we call...
From my feet.
Feet. Right.
So there is I all the time.
Yes.
As long as realities are not separated,
yes.
As just arising and falling away,
yes.
They don't know each other at all.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it. The realities don't know each other.
Mm-hmm. Seeing, there's no hearing.
Right.
But actually, his nimitta of hardness conditions, he does recognize that there's something
ground.
And from that something is the idea of feet.
So
the hardness, the experience of hardness is conditioning the thinking, not the other way around.
And when there is right understanding, you can understand that as just a reality.
Has this memory of previous experience, the sanya, of that experience, plus there's been other moments of experiencing hardness, so this sanya arises with every moment, so that's thrown in as well to add to the complexity.
So back to the expression, the text guarding the nimitta, understanding the nimitta. This can either be in the context of satipatthana or samatha, depending on the kind and degree of understanding. But even if it's in the context of samatha, guarding, understanding the nimitta, I mean, even at those moments there can be right understanding of that kind of understanding or calm in the development of samatha.
And usually the nimitta of samatha is not the nimitta of reality.
No, just the concept about light or whatever, or breath.
In samatha it's guarding against other levels of akusala, whereas in vipassana it's guarding against ignorance. Wouldn't you
but
say
I
that?
I think that from what I understand is from the comment that the guarding means understanding, even in the development of samatha, it is understanding that nimitta at that moment, understanding it in a wholesome way, so that there is calm at that moment, and at that moment there is no akusala. But it's still understanding.
Yeah, but still they're different. And yeah. How are they different? That's my question.
Because in satipatthana it is understanding the characteristic or the nimitta of reality. But in samatha it is understanding that nimitta, for example, of breath or light, as we were talking about the other day, in the wholesome way that brings calm at that moment.
But still it would be not about knowing concept as concept and reality as reality, it would still have concept as object.
Yes.
So, it's the nimitta of concept or the nimitta of reality?
At the moment of understanding the nimitta of concept, there's no thought about is this reality or not or anything like that.
Usually in a day it's the nimitta of concept. But when there's right understanding, it's the nimitta of reality, the subject. Like visible object, it's not just one kalapa. The nimitta of that which can be seen can be nimitta of right understanding of reality.
Could you say more about that, please?
Right now, usually, the nimitta is the nimitta of concept. But when there's right understanding, it begins to be nimitta of right understanding, nimitta of reality. For example, those who do not hear about the teachings at all will have only nimitta of concept. They really believe what is seen must be people and things. But for those who have studied, it's the understanding or the beginning of understanding was meant by nimitta of reality.
The nimitta of reality is not just one kalapa though, is it, Ajahn?
No.
It must be many kalapa.
Oh,
yeah.
Like hardness too.
Yeah, many kalapa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think, in fact, one kalapa cannot have nimitta, right?
Right. Yeah, that's what I was getting at. It's impossible.
So when there is understanding of a reality, like visible object, it isn't one kalapa, is that what you're saying? It's not like when there's knowledge of visible object. It's many kalapas that it experience. Okay.
Could one kalapa be objective?
No, it's too tiny, too
too fast. Otherwise we cannot see the panya of the Buddha. That only he can.
No, I mean,
nimitta of right understanding is not the development of understanding. understanding does not develop.
The development means that which arise.
Yes, again.
And grow different.
It's different. So I'm thinking about what the nimitta of right understanding is like.
Not one moment.
It's not one moment.
Mm-hmm. You mean the nimitta is the object of right understanding?
No, of right understanding.
All sankhara nimitta, vinyana nimitta too.
Okay.
Like now, who knows the sampatichanna santirana uttapana?
Not me.
See, the nimitta of vinyana can appear to develop understanding as that which experiences.
Wait, what did you mean by the nimitta of understanding?
It was something that Adan said before, that there are the
Sankhara nimitta includes everything.
Yes.
Vedana, sanya.
The nimitta of understanding then is?
Of all, not only understanding.
Any sankhara. Okay.
Any sankhara dharma.
Including banya.
Including.
So it's not one moment of banya, it's a number of moments of banya.
Where does
banya
appear?
Where?
Oh, when?
Oh, when?
When? No, where? Where does banya appear?
When one is asked about where, does one mean the place or what? The point or what?
In the process?
Can it appear in the mind through mind door?
Yes.
As far as I know, it can't appear through sense door.
Yes, yes, mind door. Yes.
What do you point here when you say mind door?
She has to point somewhere.
When we talk about the nama, we forget that we are talking about nama because we associate it with rupa.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
That's right.
But the mind or where it arises in relation to rupa, it arises here.
The heart.
But at that time, it does not appear.
No, it doesn't appear.
Yeah.